Chapter 12. Making Nora Ephron's film Julie and Julia and playing Julia Child's husband Paul to Meryl's Julia was an honor and a pleasure. As I've said, from an early age, I was enamored of Julia Child and therefore more than keen to enter the world that Nora so lovingly realized. For certain projects, a lot of research is necessary, but it is not always as enjoyable as it was this time around. In this case, I read as much as possible about Julie and Paul, spent time with Paul's great-nephew, the wonderful writer Alex Prudhomme, and, to get a real taste of his life, pun intended and achieved, cooked a number of recipes from my copy of Julia's Mastering the Art of French Cooking that my mother had given to me years ago. In fact, Meryl and I made Blanquette de Veau together for Kate and our friend Ren Arthur one night, which surprisingly turned out very well. Although due to disorganization and poor planning, we served dinner 2 hours later than intended. I blame the star of the film. Paul Child was a fascinating man. He was an expert in judo, a painter, and a photographer, although he only had the use of one eye due to a childhood accident, spoke fluent French, worked in the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, in Sri Lanka, where he met Julia, and eventually became a member of the American Diplomatic Corps after the Second World War, working as a cultural liaison in France, Germany, and Norway. He was as voracious a reader as he was an eater, and therefore had an extensive knowledge of countless subjects. During their time abroad, Paul encouraged Julia to study cooking and eventually take those skills to television when they returned to live in the U.S. in the early 1960s. Retired at this point, he supported her behind the scenes, carrying her kitchen kit from studio to studio, helping with prep work, and washing pots and pans at the end of the day, as well as illustrating and taking photos for her cookbooks. In short, he was a very advanced fella for his time, and one of the most interesting people I've had the pleasure of playing. The entire experience was only made better by Nora, Meryl, and the convivial atmosphere on set. As I may have alluded to in previous pages, this is a rather rare occurrence. That conviviality remained when we were reunited over a year later for our press tour. To kick it off, President and Michelle Obama chose Julie and Julia to be the first film shown in the White House screening room when he was first elected, an event to which we were all thrilled to be invited. When we arrived, the President and the First Lady greeted us and could not have been more charming as we tried our best not to gush all over them. After a little chit-chat, President Obama left to attend some affair of some state, while Mrs. Obama and the rest of us went to the small White House screening room to watch the film. We knew in that moment that no matter where we subsequently went on the remainder of the press tour, this would be a tough act to follow. However, there was one other experience that was also very notable, but for distinctly different reasons. There's a little restaurant slightly inland from the Normandy coast, the name of which I can't remember, and that's probably a good thing. This is where Meryl, Chris Messina, and I found ourselves one afternoon as we were heading from Deauville to Paris. We had been promoting Julie and Julia at the Deauville Film Festival, which is one of my favorites because it is a very relaxed affair, unlike most of the other major film festivals. At Deauville, there's a fair amount of the usual repetitive press interviews to be done, as well as a few photo shoots, always painful. But screenings take place only during the day, hence the evenings and nights are for the most part one's own. Guests will stay at the Hotel Barrière-le-Royal with a view of the seemingly endless beaches made famous by the painter Boudin over a century ago. The air is fresh, the skies are blue, until they suddenly turn a deep gray and let loose a dramatic thunderstorm, making the whole experience quite romantic. The festival and the setting are a film lover's and a filmmaker's dream. The location is a food lover's dream. That area of the Gallic coast is, of course, known for its seafood as well as its more rustic country fare. The buffet lunch poolside at the Hotel Le Royal is in itself a typical Norman treat. Platters of fruits de mer on beds of ice, crisp green salads with a classic shallot dressing, fresh baguettes and bottles of rosé or Sancerre are on offer and quickly snapped up by all the guests. There are also many wonderful restaurants in the surrounding area if one is interested in venturing out of the Barrière bubble. I've been to the festival often over the years, staying for varying lengths of time, but on this trip I was there only a couple of days, as we were scheduled to attend a premiere for the film and a press junket in Paris. The morning of our departure saw us in a parade of cars heading northward to our destination with a small detour to the hallowed beaches of D-Day. As a World War II buff, I was beyond excited to visit this place I had read so much about. Needless to say, it turned out to be more fascinating and moving than I ever could have imagined, and years later, I am still overwhelmed by the experience. After our tour, well, actually Merrill got the tour. Our designated guide, who I think was the head of the whole site, was clearly smitten and hastily whisked her away while the rest of us tried to keep up as best we could, straining to overhear a fact or two that he imparted breathily into my co-star's ear. We returned to our convoy and headed for lunch at a little country bistro that one of the drivers was familiar with. We arrived at a charming eatery off a side road, famished and thirsty for the grape, as usual. The cast of characters at the table was composed of M. Streep, my publicist Jen, Chris Messina, Merrill's brother Dana, an avid eater, to say the least, and myself. The owner, who was no doubt as excited to meet Merrill as our D-Day beach tour guide, at least had the decency to acknowledge the presence of her dining companions, and swiftly brought us bread, water, the menu, and thankfully, wine. As I said, we were starving, but we also knew that we were going to Paris, where we would end up eating a lot of something somewhere wonderful, so we all vowed to be judicious with our lunch orders. The menu consisted of mostly dishes from the area and was primarily more meat and game than fish-based. There were, of course, eggs, mayonnaise, mosh salad as a starter, and entrees like anglette, omelette aux herbes, or tripe à la mode de Caen. Perusing the menu, I noticed that a specialty of the house was andouillette. I thought it looked interesting, and I asked Merrill if she had ever eaten it. She said she hadn't, but since we both expressed a penchant for andouille sausages, we figured this must be a diminutive version of them, given that the name ended in et. When the charming owner and waitress returned, we ordered our starters, and more wine, as it had obviously evaporated in the afternoon heat, and inquired about the andouillette. They explained that it was a sausage, to which we said of course we knew as much, being careful not to make too much a show of our worldliness, and that it was particular to Normandy. Wanting to demonstrate that the ugly American is an endangered species, all of us, with the exception of Jen, ordered the andouillette with definitive gusto, accompanied by a kind of bring-it-on sweeping gesture of the arm. Our host noted our order and gracefully made his exit. A moment later, the waitress arrived with our wine. Corks popping, we chatted about the experience of the festival and how lucky we had been to have a private tour of the D-Day Memorial site, or at least follow Merrill's private tour. Our starters arrived, over which we yummed and awed, while we ordered more wine because, well, there was none left in the bottles because I guess we drank it. We ate heartily as the waitress topped us up, and before we knew it, we had finished our first course. After a few minutes' rest, our entrees arrived. Jen's bright green salad was placed before her, but laid before the rest of us was a plate upon which sat something that I can only say bore a staggering resemblance to a horse cock. I watched Merrill's face drop slightly, and from her mouth come a small, "Oh." Then she smiled politely and glanced at me, searching for an answer to a question yet unformed, but seeing that I was staring at the contents of my plate with slack-jawed confusion, she turned back to the waitress. Merrill, "Is this the, waitress, "Oui, madame." "The andouillette." Merrill, "Oh, good. Merci." Waitress, "Merci beaucoup, madame." Placing the remaining plates of this Norman specialty in front of Dana and Chris's empty chair, he had gone to make a phone call, the waitress departed with a cheery bon appétit. There was a moment of silence, not for the fallen on the beaches we had just visited, but for fear of what was before us. We exchanged concerned looks. I spoke first. Me. "Huh. This is not what I..." Merrill. "No, not at all." Dana stared at his while stubbing out a cigarette. Dana. "It's supposed to be good. That's what they said, right?" Me. "Yeah, but I thought it would be..." Dana. "What?" Me. "Well, smaller, you know? Et? Andouillette? Small." Merrill. "Yes, me too. I mean, this is..." Me. "Well, it looks like a fucking horse cock." Merrill. "Yes, it certainly does." A beat of silence. Merrill. Oh, well. She cut off a small piece and placed it in her mouth. She chewed gingerly. Her face showed a lifetime of human emotion in a split second. She swallowed. She brought her napkin to her lips. She spoke very quietly. Meryl. Well, it does have a bit of the barnyard about it. I placed a tidbit into my mouth, and before it had passed my second taste bud, I was spewing it out onto my plate and trying not to projectile vomit the accumulation of two gluttonous days all over my colleagues. I grabbed my wine, swilled it, stuffed half a baguette into my mouth, and chased it down with more wine. To my right, I could see that Dana had tucked into the thing wholeheartedly and seemed to be doing fine until he was halfway through his second forkful, when he suddenly looked at me, his eyes wide with terror. Grabbing his napkin, he ejected the remnants into it and said something like, "Christ!" At this moment, Chris Messina returned to the table and eyed his awaiting entree. As he took his seat, all three of us shouted, "Don't touch that!" Chris, "Why? Is it..." "Just don't. Don't." The waitress came by and asked if everything was all right, and we assured her that it was. I even went so far as to praise the dish, but noticed a slight smirk on her lips as she departed. Moments later, the owner returned and looked at us bemusedly. "The andouille? It is not..." All four of us. "Yes, I mean, it's great, but it's just not what we were expecting. It's a little different than others we've had. As more pathetic excuses and untruths were spoken, he smiled and nodded understandingly. After a moment, he told the waitress, who had been lurking behind him, more than amused, to clear our plates and asked if we would like to order anything else. All four of us. "Four omelets, please." Owner. "Will that be all?" All four of us. "Add more wine?" As we waited for our assuredly benign entrees to arrive, we decided that it was not only the brave Allied forces that caused the Germans to pull back. Most likely, it was the fear of having to eat andouillette day after day as penance for their brutal conquest of Normandy that also precipitated the Nazi retreat. Here is the objective, very politically correct Wikipedia definition of andouillette. Andouillette, French pronunciation, andouillette, is a coarse-grained sausage made with pork, or occasionally veal, chitterlings, intestine, pepper, wine, onions, and seasonings. Tripe, which is the stomach lining of a cow, is sometimes an ingredient in the filler of an andouillette, but it is not the casing or the key to its manufacture. True andouillette will be an oblong tube. If made with the small intestine, it is a plump sausage, generally around 25 millimeters in diameter, but is often much larger, possibly 7 to 10 centimeters in diameter, and stronger in scent when the colon is used. True andouillette is rarely seen outside France and has a strong, distinctive odor related to its intestinal origins and components. Although sometimes repellent to the uninitiated, this aspect of andouillette is prized by its devotees. Need I say more?